My first job was actually selling jeans for $5 an hour. That was my first job. And in USSR, they highlight the education. You got to go get the education. That was preset career for a lot of people. So I went through education. I went through the corporate career. And one thing that changed my life, it's a Russian tradition to go to Russia's spa, right? Where they hit you with the leaves and you're sitting there bare naked and it's fun and social event. And a friend of mine was a entrepreneur. He had this thing where he starts a business and he gives it to his relative to run. And then he pockets 25% of his revenue. So we're sitting around the table and I know those guys and they're all relatives of this guy. And we started to talk money, to talk business. And of course, I got my master's degree from Lehigh. I got my bachelor's from Temple. And, you know, I was making at that time still a decent money today, $120,000. And I thought, oh my God, I'm making so much money. You know, it's crazy amount of money and nobody else can top me. And, you know, I got masters, I got patents, I got this, I got that. And then we started talking and the guy is saying, you know, to his relative who barely graduated high school, how much are you making? He goes, no, I don't want to say it. I don't want to say it because I don't want to embarrass anybody. I don't want to just say the number. No. I gave you the business. You got to say, what is the number? And he says, no, I don't want to say it. It's private. So what do you mean private? I gave you the business. Tell me the number. And he goes, well, this year I made $3 million. I look around. I almost fell down on the floor because to me, that short-circuited my brain, right? I said, how can somebody who doesn't have any education make $3 million a year? At that point, I come home to my wife. I said, listen, you know, something's wrong. I studied for God knows how many years. I got my master's. I got this. I got patents. And I only get 120. And this guy gets 3 million. How does that make sense? So my wife goes, listen, I will stay with our first child. You do whatever you have to do. So from that point on, I started to look for the business opportunities. I was a crazy man. I was like rat running, you know, around and trying to make a lot of business. Same thing with me, right? So I'm running around. I'm trying to figure out what is my next big idea. Now, before that, of course, everything starts with my wife. She starts to tell me, listen, your friends are making money. You're sitting on the couch. You're watching TV. Get up. Go do some real estate. Go invest in the real estate. So we started to invest in student housing in the University of Delaware, in PA, University of Pennsylvania, apartment complexes. And that didn't produce a lot of revenue. So having the real estate to me was such a pain. Hammer and nail was always a pain to me. And having a side income is great, but it was such a struggle. I had issues with the drug dealers, drug users. I was stepping over, people passed out. I had a gun pointed to my head while I was collecting rent. So I had so many adventures and I said, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do any hammer and nail. I want a clean business. And the idea that I struck in my head, I said, I used this company for underwriting the deals, doing title diligence, like Wendy does all the time, right? And I said, this guy just cost me $20,000 when I bought the property at the auction. You know, it was a leaky house. There was liens, there were city liens, violations. And I said, I think I can do better. And that when I had the idea born, that I wanted to do something on my own and start with the title diligence, right? My first company that I started in 2007. So started with nothing, going through education, getting to a glass ceiling salary and realizing that there's much more out there. And this is entrepreneur hour, right? So we're all entrepreneurs here, or we want to be entrepreneurs, right? We want to maximize what we're making. And I came to realization, I think too late, way too late. My 20-year-old son is already entrepreneur, right? He lives in Miami. He enjoys his life, right? Because I served him as an example. But, you know, going through this path, it was interesting that we were taught in Belarus, USSR, and all the in 90s and 80s that you have to really follow the career path. You have to get your degree. You have to go and find the job. And that's it. They don't tell you that there's much more out there. And I end up learning it by myself 10 years in. And I think after that, getting a job and trying to build a business at night, that was a full adventure. It's something that changed my life with one phone call. And I remember today that a year into the business, I received a phone call for my prototype company, and I was doing it part-time, right? At night, during the day, I was working for, you know, Fortune 100 companies. And that call was interesting. In 2009, I received the call, and it went something like this. Is this ProTitle? I say, yes. Okay, great. Do you do title searches? Yeah. Okay, this is FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. I'm like, that's interesting. Sounds like a big client. Let me just do one thing before I continue the story. To make a search or a product in our world, it takes, commercial product especially, it takes about a day for one order. So let me continue the story. The FDIC says, well, Alex, can ProTitle handle commercial searches? Sure. Well, we have a lot of bank fails. And we're closing banks right and left. And we need all people that can search the title for the failed banks helping us to close the institutions. And they said, can you handle commercial orders? I said, sure. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's one or two. Can you handle 10,000 commercial orders? What do you think I said? Sure. Yeah. Okay. Can you get it done in a week? What do you think I said? Absolutely. So at the end of the conversation, I hanged up. We got my company vetted. And it's a pure hustle to assemble the teams of about 150 people to work on my project. So that was the start of this beautiful company that competed for FDIC business against First American, Fidelity, Old Republic, NTC. So there were probably seven companies. Right now, FDIC only has one subcontractor, is me. 7-year contract to close any banks that fail. So I did the Signature Bank, I did the Silicon Valley Bank, I did the bank just closed in Texas. That was a story that shows that, you know, if you say yes to everything somebody offers you, at some point, it'll pay off.
I guess so. I gotta jump in and ask. Okay, you went from working for a company, probably with a tech background, because I noticed you had mentioned in one of your podcasts that you worked with AT&T Bell, and you do chips. And that's a big jump from a tech to going into an entrepreneurial space where you actually have to sell yourself. How did you do that? Like, how did you get from chips to technology, hopping right over and going into this new space with, you know, due diligence, title search, and, you know, mitigation, all that? How do you apply what you learn in the tech space all the way over into this space? I just want to know.
You got to marry, right? So you have to have the right woman behind you. So my wife told me, you got to go out there, don't sleep, drink a lot of coffee, make it happen. I got to, you know, I got the kid at home and I got the house, you know. So she was working full time and she was handling whatever's going on at home. You guys remember the flip phones, the Motorola Razr?
Oh, yeah. Right? Of course, yes.
That was my design. So I was the architect for microchips.
Really?
Yeah, Nokia, Ericsson phones, that was me. So I was the designer working at AT&T Bell Labs. What a great company. And, you know, it's in ruins now. It was split and you know, a bunch of... I traveled to India to educate my own replacement. You know, I look back and, you know, it was probably the Bush's presidency that allowed offshoring. Oh, my God, it destroyed so many companies. That was such a bad move. Now, I use offshore today, right, because of that, because I'm a businessman, I have to, and I probably have close to 500 people offshore working for me right now, right? So how do they go from the full-time job to entrepreneur? I am playing safe. While I was working, I was developing a business, right? And then when I felt that the business picked up enough revenue that can sustain my family, I said, okay, I'm quitting. So it was the smooth transition. I'm not the one that takes risks. to say, okay, screw that. I'm starting my own business. And if the business fails, then I fail my family. No. I have to make sure that, you know, I have a smooth transition. I work until I am ready to jump. It's like a rolling business. You always fire and hire people on your own terms. You have to be risk prone. So in other words, if I don't like somebody and somebody is lazy in my company, I can't fire them right away, even though they deserve it. I have to hire somebody, train somebody to replace that person, and then fire. So that's one thing that I learned as a businessman.
I like that answer. And I know you drank enough coffee in your lifetime, but we'll probably be sending you one of our coffee cups. This is the Global Billionaire Rainmaker Cup. And I know you probably have enough coffee in your veins, but I'm going to go ahead and yield the mic to Wendy and Macy for another interrogation question. I don't know, man.
Yeah. So, Alex, now you talked about going from the Fortune 500 company where you were working for someone else to drastically scaling your company quickly. And you obviously knew that there was a gap or a need in that workspace over there. Can you talk to us about picking a niche that you think is going to be lucrative and that also is not going to be replaced by AI or going to die out? Do you have any advice for people on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you have to claw yourself in the niche space, right? You have to always sell on the pain. That's the role of the business, right? Find out the pain of your client or somebody you would like to work for and solve that pain. So we started with sponsoring little conferences here and there, very local conferences, real estate conferences, investor conferences. In fact, I failed so many times before that while I was finding, you know, what do I want to do with the company? How do I want to expand it? One of the things that I failed in, that's a good example to before I succeeded, my thought to start a company during the great financial crisis was to sell the free title reports or charge very little money at the footsteps of the sheriff's houses, right? Whenever there's a sheriff's auction, I thought, well, I'll do the search on everything that goes up for sale. And then for all the investors, I'll say, well, buy it for $50. What a horrible idea. So I was standing there like an idiot. Nobody would buy my reports. And I said, that's interesting. So people do diligence ahead of time. Maybe a few days ahead, they don't, you know, they're going to the auctions ready. They're bidding on those properties, on all rehab houses. So I said, well, that was a bad idea. Now, what can I do? So I figured out that there's a space where investors trade notes, right? So as you know, there's a huge debt in the United States, which means somebody holds and services that debt. And that debt being traded on capital markets. And I said, well, that's interesting because every time the debt is traded, there's billion-dollar transactions. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD, Ginnie Mae, Goldman Sachs, Pretium, so Nomura, big names, JP Morgan Chase, big names are selling the billion-dollar packages to other banks. And nobody has analytics that can look at every asset and give them everything on the plate, fully analyzed, to invest or not to invest. And that's what I focused on. I figured out that this is a volume game. I need to generate, you know, 10, 20,000 orders at the same time. And the only way to generate those is not onesie, twosie investor. It's the people that operate in billions, right? So to me, I sponsored a few conferences. I got my first client that operated in that space. He would buy $1 billion transactions. And certainly, I'm sure you'll have guests that will tell you how to find funding, how to bring the $1 billion investor, and how to go and grab the big assets and what to do with those assets. In US, it's such a game to play in that space. So I found that first investor and I flew to Minneapolis and I said, listen, his name is Steve, let's sit down and figure out what can I do for you? Not just the plain vanilla report and summary pages and all this interesting stuff, but can I design something, an analytics for you that will give you a investor on or not invest in the portfolio? What is the, you know, what is the lien amounts? How much liens do you have to pay after you acquire it? So all those questions I want to answer in concise fashion. We sat down, we designed the dream product for this guy. Now, luckily, he said, Alex, if anybody else wants it, go sell it. I started to knock at the doors of the big companies. And everybody says, wow, this is the greatest thing. And all of a sudden, I start talking to the guys like Bank of America, Citi, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. And they all want this product. And all of a sudden, you know, you're now faced with the question, you know, how do I grow very fast, right? Onshore, offshore. I probably have onshore today in the United States, 195 people. All they do something that delivers that product to big players, right? So to find out the niche, I failed first time, probably second or third time. I don't even remember how I failed it, but I'm sure I did. But trying to figure out what is the service that I can bring that will differentiate myself from anybody else. Right? I'm not good looking, am I? I don't know. Maybe a little. You know, I have an accent. I'm shy. I'm introvert. You know, I don't like talking, but I'm forcing myself to talk. And some people are natural, like Radis Natural. Oh, I love you talk. Wendy, you're great, right? Macy, credit, you guys are too. But the point is, I had to win on tech. I have to be the smartest man in the room. I have to have the product that nobody else has. That's the winning formula, right? If I have something that competes against everybody else and it's much better and, of course, much cheaper, then it's much easier for me to come in and talk with the accent and not be as pretty and not even wear the shoes that Macy acquired, right? But so it's, in my mind, it's that's my game, right? As a geek, engineer, software science, somebody who is constantly with a computer and is poor in communicating with people, that's my recommendation. If you're looking for the next big idea, try to be the smartest man in the room with the best product that sells by itself.
I love it, yeah.
One of the products that I was interested in talking to you about that you've been able to produce, and the reason I want to ask you about this product is we have a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included. A lot of us built a business not so much to work the rest of our lives, right? We want to build it up and then exit successfully. And one of the products that you developed, I'd like to get a little bit more information about, if you could share with us, is your automated exit strategy for businesses. Can you walk us through what that entails and how you can help entrepreneurs on the exit side of things?
It's exit strategy for the portfolio acquisitions.
Okay.
So yeah, it's slightly different, but same type of thing. So we developed a product, it's a pro-title product, that looks at every element on the property, title data, right, collateral, and we figure out what are the hair or what are the defects or exceptions that, you know, the client will need to resolve. And based on that, we define the easiest exit strategies on the investment. So when somebody buys a portfolio of assets, let's say $1 billion worth of, I don't know, 1,500 loans, and each loan has something wrong with it, that's why they're selling it. Investors typically want to group them in different categories, right? So one category is deal or foreclosure, right? So Wendy knows all about it, right? So basically, you have to work with the borrower to avoid the foreclosure, and then you offer a little bit of money for them to move and sell the property. Another set is things like title claim. Another set is foreclosure. Another set is modification, the home equity line of credit. So there's a lot of things that you define as an exit strategy, and you just, based on the defects and exceptions that you see on title, you define what they are and you group them together. So when our clients, investors, are looking at the reports, they already know how to price it because they know the price of the foreclosure in every state. They know the price of the foreclosure attorney. They know what it's involved and pay for Wendy's services to do deal to market the property. So they already know the buckets of how they want to exercise the exit strategy. So that's the product that we developed. Everybody's using it today. Anybody big on the capital markets, and capital markets are big banks that typically play in it. Small players, yes. Right now, there's no product out there for the small players. People trade in billions.
So it's an algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
How,
Okay, so you have input benchmarks that you put into, and it's, I would imagine it's your proprietary information on the algorithm, and then it identifies the sweet spot for the sell to maximize the sell.
Exactly, to maximize the profit. So in other words, I don't have to sell the assets. I can just keep the assets, foreclose on the property, and sell the property, right? So I have the different strategies.
So you can roll it. So yeah, it's not sell, but it's telling you how to butterfly it all, almost.
Yeah, everybody has a different game in the debt market. People, you know, aggregate and then sell for a higher multiple. People like the property. They buy it to fix and flip. They buy it to work with the, if you have somebody who has not been paying their mortgage and they want to work with a borrower to get them paying for the mortgage, and instantly the debt itself doesn't cost 60 cents on a dollar, it costs 105 because it's now a performing asset. So those different games you can play in the debt market. Tons of opportunities, tons. But you have to be playing with the bigger boys, right? That know what they're doing, that have their ecosystem, that have their vendors. They know the exact flow of how to do things.
Interesting.
That's amazing.
So switching gears here, you talked to me about your son and how he is just killing it out there as an entrepreneur. And he's young. He's a young guy. Do you say he's 20 now?
Yeah.
20? Yeah. And you talked about, is he making his money using AI? Was that one of the things he's doing? How is he monetizing using AI? And how can other people monetize using AI?
Yeah, great question. You know, just to step back, I have an AI company as well, right? So one of my companies is the AI-based rated TPR firm. So I said a lot of things there. So TPR means third-party reviewer. Rated means rated by all the rating agencies like S&P, Fitch, Kroll, etc. And we underwrite complex securities. Again, if you notice, I'm a CEO of three companies, and the AI companies are bolt-on to all the services that my first company offers, right? So that's why I can handle three companies at the same time. But coming back to my son, he finished 2 years of Penn State. And then he says, Dad, I think I know more than all the professors. I said, what do you mean? He says, those guys are, you know, on tenure, they're teaching the same thing, and they don't teach me about money. And I look at you, and you're all over the place. You're meeting here, you're meeting there. You're taking me to NASDAQ, and I'm looking at all the screens, and it's all great. And I want to be like you. I said, well, graduate, give me the degree. I said, in my former life, you got to have a degree to succeed. He says, Dad, you just wasted 10 years of your life working for somebody, right? And then started to make money when you're an entrepreneur, real money. I want, so on my top 10 list, I want to have a BMW M4. You know the young kids, right? BMW M4, you know, I got to have cash. I got to move to Miami. I got to do this and this. And I want to do everything before I turn to 20. He did. How did he do it? So apparently young kids are so much smarter than me at 19. I was freaking chasing girls, right? He is so focused on his business. And it's a lead generation, right? So he is using video AI bots. He is using the video editing of AI. He is using the CRM system, AI CRM system. He has seven people in the Philippines answering the phone. So at 20, he already figured out how to offshore, how to gain business, grow his business, how to do advertising on Google, Facebook, local Google Marketplace, and every possible channel, he's already there. I'm amazed. And now I have to convince my wife that maybe he doesn't need education, right? She's screaming at me. She's saying, no, get me 2 more years and I'll be happy, because she's old school. But the kid is phenomenal. He's using everything that's available today. And as soon as something comes out, he jumps on it, learns it, and he's using it for his business. I think he's using, I can't remember the CRM name, but it's one of those AI systems as well, similar to Salesforce. But I'm amazed. The kid nowadays makes probably 10 times more than I ever made at 20, right? So I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, sounds like he's going to be just fine. And you hear Grant Cardone talking about that a lot too. Don't waste your time going to college. And he's got his kids going to Cardone University, you know, where he's teaching them. And it looks like it's working out for them as well. Yeah, that's cool. I do want to ask you, this was interesting. I saw on your blog that you asked the question, who owns the U.S.? And you had all of these different people, and a lot of them are private entrepreneurs. I mean, Ted Turner was one, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates. And I find it interesting that you have all of this data. And I'm just curious, what made you even think to go into looking at that? And do you have concerns about that since you have all this access to the data? Are you concerned at all about things like that? I'm going off on a tangent, a little bit different.
I'm not concerned. Yeah, let me just take a step back. I have access to every real estate record in the United States, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, and Guam, right? So I can look at anybody and I can say, oh, this guy owns property here, here, and here, and this is how much he paid, and this is what's outstanding. Does it make me dangerous? I don't know. I guess so. I can compile a lot of, interesting data, but I use it for very cool projects. As an example, during the first Trump presidency, I was helping U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to build the Trump Wall on the border of Texas. So we did the research on where the land is, who owns it, right? The river that flows in the border moves with time, and the border moves with time, and we have to figure out where to put the wall itself, right? The structure. That was a cool project. I was working with the Boring Group, which is Elon Musk's company, to research on where to put the tunnel for Tesla in Chicago, right? O'Hare Airport to downtown. Right now they're building in Austin. A lot of the U.S. departments, governments use me. Department of Justice for some of their cases, FBI, IRS. Oh, I know you guys don't pay taxes. But, you know, I get to play in a lot of markets. And the access to data is not necessarily, you know, to investigate why Bezos bought a property in Miami and how much he paid for it and did he move that to the trust. But I use the data to do something cool, to participate in fun projects. Closing the bank is a fun project too. Closing the credit unions, we work with the NCUA, right? It's the same thing as FDIC for credit unions. And a lot of credit unions are in trouble now.
I said, can you name them? Talking about working for FDIC and closing banks. I got some banks I want to ask them about because that's where I've got my money.
I'm sure they're safe. Wink, wink.
Yeah, we hope so. Yeah, wink, wink.
Listen, it's just us and my friends here.
Trust me. So the banks are fine. The banks are fine. I was worried about them last year because of the commercial crisis. The commercial crisis still is there, and it didn't go away. In fact, all of my investments, I mean, I tried everything as an entrepreneur. I invested in oil and gas fracking wells. I have 17 of those in Oklahoma. I'm a part of the Ponzi scheme lawsuit. Again, investing in some weird stuff. You know, I invested in multifamily quite a bit, and those investments are suffering like crazy. You know, if I feel the pain, the bank feels even more pain, right? So from my perspective, we're still not out of the woods, but the banks on the resi side, it's all good, it's all rosy.
I'm not going to ask you which banks are in trouble. I would not put you on that spot, but what I will do is ask you where you banks.
You said Wells Fargo is one of them. Bank of America and Wells Fargo.
Those are his clients.
No.
Yeah. May not be good for us.
I don't know, Alex. Am I right?
So I always follow the leader, right? Who is the leader of the pack? Maybe top five, they'll be safe, right? If somebody is a small bank or small credit union, personally, I would not risk to put my business accounts or personal accounts there. Right. So I do use the top five banks, Bank of America, Wells, JP Morgan, et cetera. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Question. I'm sorry. You mentioned that you have an AI company and your AI company goes through using that to integrate into your business. Now, you also mentioned that as much as you incorporate AI, there's also one element that human opinion and review should never be automated. Can you expand on that thought?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me take a step back and say that, you know, there's a rule in AI space. The human without AI will be replaced with a human with AI. Okay, what do I mean by that? AI is here to help and automate all the mechanical processes. I travel around the country and go from the bank to a servicer to another institution, and everybody's talking about AI. Nobody's doing anything, but everybody's talking about how important it is. It's a lot of hype. There's people on TEDx that are talking about AI. Oh my God, I can't listen to any of that. You know, I go to AI conferences. People get up on the stage and talk about how important AI is. AI is cool. AI is this. Nobody makes money in AI. Nobody makes money in AI except for people that are building data centers, Microsoft, Amazon's of the world, Google's of the world. They offer the tech, underlying baseline tech. All the apps on AI, they cost nothing or peanuts. The only way to make money in AI, and this is my own experience, we can argue about it, is to solve the painful process of something that human does, very mechanical, very, you know, mundane daily routine. If that's automated, it saves the margin dollars. And you can remove that human and put them somewhere else. I am worried, though, that it'll be spike in unemployment big time. You guys saw the Salesforce just laid off 4,000 people.
I saw one of your videos because you've been pretty outspoken about the tariffs and what's that going to mean for the labor force. There's a couple of interesting points that you made. I mean, where do you see this going on a couple of things? On the labor force and then on imports, I think you made a comment that it's you're finding rerouting supply chains around it is actually better for the bottom dollar than continuing production from A to B straight to the U.S. I found that to be fascinating. I mean, where specifically are you thinking, what regions, obviously you're going to reroute into Mexico and come in that way, but talk a little bit about the labor force and the layoffs and what do you see for the market?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I see a lot of layoffs are coming, right? And if you are stuck in that role that will be replaced, in my mind, you know, you are screwed. You're done. Start looking for a different venue to open a business or start something that is related to human labor. Human labor will never go away. Folks like general contractors or even realtors. I don't know, Wendy. I think realtors might be in trouble, but who knows? So things that are done with the paper today or something that, you know, answering service, I think it'll all be automated. Even, you know, I gave one of my editors for the YouTube channel, he says, Alex, can you give me a permission to use AI bot instead of you? And he created the video with me. I couldn't tell the difference. I was so amazed. I'm like, wow, this is great. But now, talking about the tariffs real quick. So Wendy and I and Red went to Mexico. We talked about, you know, what can we do as U.S. entrepreneurs to figure things out with tariffs that are coming. And I think we should all benefit. Folks that are here in U.S. and not outside of U.S. should be a great beneficiary of tariffs, which means now you're opening the businesses in U.S. I am personally looking at opportunity zones, okay? Absolutely. The change is great. You know, I love it. It's such a dynamic environment where I look at all the, you know, all the industries, there's so many opportunities.
Let's box that product up, Alex.
Yeah, let's do that.
Market with it. Let's box up the big, beautiful bill. We got to call it something good. Breakdown. Okay, so that
we'll call it the Rainmakers.
That package.
We'll call it the Rainmakers bill.
There.
And I want to, I know we're running out of time here, and we always like to allow our audience to have some questions. But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about your YouTube channel and the podcast that you do, Capital Market Analytics. And when do your new episodes come out? How do we find you? All of those kind of things. And then we'll go directly to our audience to ask some questions.
Thank you. So people can Google my first last name, Alex Goldowski. You can probably find me on the YouTube. I typically do an episode a week. Why do I do it? Not to make money. I'm sorry. First of all, I have a bragging rights right there. You see the black YouTube button? So I'm showing to my kids, your dad can still do it. But it's really for marketing purposes to be recognized at the conferences. If I need to meet with somebody and that somebody is a subscriber to my YouTube channel, it starts a conversation right away. They're already wanting to give you the business if you have the right product. So it really helps. So that was the purpose of starting the YouTube. Now, if you contact me with the Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, sorry, I don't monitor that. It's done by my team, but LinkedIn is another social media that I monitor.
I agree with you on that. It's not like we're killing it over here with the actual podcast and monetization of that, but we are doing quite a few deals that come out of it. And we get to meet interesting people like you for sure, Alex, and we appreciate you coming on. I do want to ask the audience, does anybody have any questions for those of you on chatter? I'm kind of searching over here. Anybody have? I'm surprised we don't have.
I am adding you to LinkedIn as we speak.
I know.
Alex, I have a quick question for you. So what would be your recommendation? You have young children. I don't know. Would you recommend college for children or just go to a trade school, become entrepreneurs? What is your recommendation?
Oh, it's a tough one. I'm on the fence. So I want my kid to finish college. This is one paper that I want all my kids. I have three kids, right? So all the kids should have that paper, even though they are not going to use it. I already sense it in all of them. Well, the youngest daughter, she wants to be a doctor, so that's probably end up in long medical school. But both boys, they will not use college skills. In fact, if you listen to Charlie Kirk, he says it's a waste of time. Why? Because 30% is electives. You can throw it out. And then 70% is taught by folks that have been teaching for a long time that don't know any new technologies. And, everything that's, called math is fully replaced by AI. Writing is now ChatGPT. You need to have some real skills for today's market. And folks are coming out, they're calling me, and I keep telling them, guys, I can't hire you. A, you want too much money. B, you have no skills. We have to start from the very, very beginning.
Good question, Rhett. Anybody else? I know that we are coming up on the end of the hour. Let's see. I thought I saw something in the chat. They're just commenting over there. Learn tech. Yeah, I agree with you. And I do think that college, you do make a lot of contacts, even though you're doing 30%. Maybe electives, you might meet some people in there that are going to hopefully relate back to your major and hopefully get you some contacts equals contracts, as they say, right?
Well, also people skills are really important. As you're saying that AI is going to blow up, but someone's going to have to manage that process and verify and vet all the things that come out of it. Because oftentimes when you run through these AI programs like Grok, you got to look over and make sure is it really, they'll give you the ideas, but you're still going to go back there and move it around, take out what's not relevant, and then fact check a lot of that with other systems.
So that's a great idea, right? Credit. Yeah. So there's a lot of push in our government to convert everything to e-signing, e-notary, e-notes. So everything is e. What does that mean? It means that we have to trust the video. We have to trust that somebody's showing the right passport. And we have to design the right tools to make sure that there's no fraud, right? So there's so many opportunities right now to apply to different elements, right? You just need to know what's going on in politics, what's going on in today's market, what's hot, what's not. And then, like you said, credit. It's one of those things, who verifies it's not fraud? Somebody needs to design it. I don't think there's anything exists today.
Ooh, good point.
I have one very important question. Mention in one of your YouTube interviews is people should be investing in the debt market because it's growing. Can you just 1 second expand on that part, because a lot of people are scared about debt. They're scared about credit because they don't know how to use it, right? But debt is growing. How can we leverage the debt that's out there that's growing by the second?
Yeah, so typically big companies like Blackstone, BlackRock, JP Morgan, and other funds, Wall Street funds are playing in that market. There's private credit, right? That's starting to grow. So let's say, you know, Red wants to lend a few million dollars to somebody and make a significant percent, 12 to 20%. Those loans are available and you have to really do the right diligence. How to play in the market? Let's see. So you have different segments. So you got the credit card market. There's tons of debt there, right? It's tradable. Student loan market, tradable. Then mortgage market is so vast, right? You got Resi, commercial, VA, Veteran Affairs, right? FHFA, first-time home buyers, Ginnie Mae, HUD, reverse mortgages, HELOCs, closing seconds. So there's many variances. DSCR loans, right? RTL loans. So that is full of fraud. Somebody needs to look at that one. But there's so many variances where you want to play or can play. You know, you can buy tax liens. Oh, that used to be very, very popular. It's coming back. So people are looking at that as well to try to wipe out all the mortgages before the tax lien, right? It wipes everything out and you get the property free and clear of title. And right now people are looking at that. Which states, Indiana and South Carolina, have the fastest foreclosures on the tax liens? So looking at that, Maryland, Washington, D.C. So those are the states that you're starting to dive in and figure out, okay, what's my criteria? Where do I buy? There's not a lot of properties ending up on the auction block right now. Maybe playing HOA debt. Right? A lot of people owe HOA, especially in Florida. You know, there's tons of assessments that's now coming up. So there's so many things that you really want to investigate and find out. Maybe I invest in my area, my neck of the woods, right? What's hot there? But you really have to dive in, find out the laws, find out, you know, who plays in that market. Is it a huge market, small market? Is it a flow market? If it's onesie, twosies, I'm not interested. I need the flow, right? On a monthly basis, I need to invest.
You're going to scale it. You don't want to. I like that. No onesies and twosies. You want to scale for sure. And the tax lien and the foreclosure market is definitely increasing. I'm noticing a good bit of that. I mean, unfortunately for some people and fortunately for others, of course. So anyway, well, thank you, Alex, for coming on our show today. We really enjoyed hearing from you. Everybody go and check him out on his YouTube channel, Capital Market Analytics. And what's that?
I said it's right up there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we've got the link above. Yeah. For those of you in chatter, definitely just click the link up top. And thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, Alex. Thank you.
Have a good night.
And then follow us on YouTube. And if you missed any previous episode, definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to Alex's YouTube channel. And we'll see you next week. Same time.
Same time.
Yes.
Bye, guys.